Morning, everybody. So I know you just got done doing a short meditation, but we'll do just another few minutes of meditation. I always like to sit together with people just a few minutes before talking. So we'll just do that. So come back to your breath, let your mind relax, and then after a few minutes we'll start the Dharma talk. Let's come back to our kind heart, our compassionate heart. The heart that at the end of the day really wishes everybody well. And let's have a strong determination to nurture that kind heart so that it will be very firm and steady. And anger, suspicion, grudges, these kinds of things cannot move that kind heart. So to make that happen, we have to notice when those undesirable mental states arise and apply the antidotes to them instead of following them. And also on a daily basis, we have to nurture that kind heart instead of taking it for granted. Really think of the kindness of others. Think of their situation and care about it. And in that way, keep a heart of kindness alive in us on a day-to-day basis. And so with that kind of motivation, and especially elaborating on that kind heart so that it motivates us to fulfill all of our spiritual potentials, then we'll listen to the teachings with that aim of fulfilling all of our spiritual potential for the benefit of all living beings. So we've been looking at the book Taming the Mind and going through different chapters each week in sharing the Dharma. And so we're in the middle of a whole section now about relationships. And so we've talked about friendships and, you know, parent-child relationships. And so today we're dealing with the topic of work relationships. Okay, so this is, I think everybody has some work experience. And it's just, the experience of working together to accomplish a task with other people. So it doesn't have to be an employment experience. I'm not talking solely about having a paid job, but just even here at the Abbey, when we work together to accomplish different projects, or it's the whole experience of working collaboratively with others, working with clients, working with people who supervise what you do, working with the people who benefit from the project or that you're doing, or the object you're making at your work. So all this kind of thing that has to do with accomplishing different tasks together. And the thing is, we always have to rely on other people to get things done, don't we? Yeah? And as much as we say very often, oh, it would just be so much easier to do it myself. How many times do we say that? A lot, huh? It's like, oh, I don't have to work with these people. as much as we say, oh, I just want to do it myself and be alone, the actual fact of the matter is that we do need other people's help. Because usually with whatever kind of thing we're doing, we don't know how to do all the aspects of it. And especially now, as things get more and more complex in our society and people's skills are more and more specialized, then we're even more dependent, than we were before. Okay? I mean, it used to be that maybe in a family, the person who grew the vegetables also harvested them and cooked them and served them. But that, that was one person. But that doesn't happen now. You have different people for all these different things. And so then, we're much more dependent on others and have to work more closely with others than we ever had to before. And so working together with people can be one of the most infuriating experiences we've ever had. Or it can be one of the most rewarding experiences that we've ever had. And so much of it depends on our mind. Yeah. And so what is it that makes it infuriating is when we or the other have very fixed ideas and we cling on to our ideas. Now, of course, I know that none of us are ever the stubborn ones who cling on to their ideas. Never, right? It's always the other person, the other people in the project, who are very opinionated, very close-minded, very stubborn, and don't want to listen to anybody and just want to do things their own way. But we're never like that. Right? It's always the other people. But what if we were to pretend, just for the sake of, having a discussion, that every once in a while we were the ones who were holding on to our way of doing things, and we wanted to win, we wanted to be right, we wanted to be recognized, we wanted to be the boss, okay? So it's interesting just, for us to do a little bit of introspection and at all the different times when we've worked together with other people and see, what are my habits when I work together with others? Yeah? And am I somebody who usually likes to take the leadership role? Am I somebody who usually likes to do what the leader says? When I take the leadership role, is it something that I barge in and do, or is it something that I wait for other people to hand to me? If I'm in a leadership role, what's my typical way of thinking and my expectations and my actions. If I'm in the role of being a follower, you know, what are my usual expectations and reactions and habit patterns? And so to do a little bit of, you know, internal research on this. And I think it could be very interesting, you know, thinking back upon various different times when we've worked together with others, to just write this down, you know, because we've all at some time or another been in a leadership position and at some time or another been in the position of you know, followers. And both of those positions are very important. Sometimes we just attribute things to the leader. But a leader cannot be a leader unless there are followers. They're mutually dependent. So it's not that the leader is the most important. Okay? If a leader who doesn't have good followers winds up as a mess, yeah, just as a follower who doesn't have a good leader winds up as a mess. Okay? They're mutually interdependent roles. Aryadeva went into a huge discussion of this in the 400 stanzas in one of his chapters, and it was a chapter about pride, you know, because and really saying how in society sometimes, you know, the leader is the big one and who gets arrogant, but actually a leader is only a leader because there's followers, you know, and a leader's position is to serve. We usually think the leader's position is to be the dictator and the followers are to serve, but the leader is really there to serve. Yesterday I was in a panel discussion with the mayor of Spokane. It was on the radio with the mayor, Mary Verner. And one of the first things she said was that people in government are there to serve. You know, and it's like she really got it. That's what it's about. And especially in the position of being the mayor, you know, your position is not to be the dictator. It's to serve and it's to listen to the needs of the people and then say, how can we help? Okay. So at the same time, the leader, you know, has to listen and say, how can I be of service to you? You know, then they also have to set a vision and inspire people. But they can't set the vision and inspire people without listening to the people they're working with. Yeah? Or, and so in the terms of the mayor, that means all of the city employees. She said there were like 2,000? Do you remember how many? She said, a lot of city employees. Without listening to them and without listening to the whole population, which are the people they serve. Okay, so you really have to listen and then synthesize from that and then bring, you know, bring forth the purpose and inspire people. But as we, when we're in the relation, the role of being a follower, also, I mean, you can be a bad follower and you can be a good follower. Yeah, I mean, what's a bad follower like? You know, they don't want anybody to tell them what to do. They don't want anybody to comment on their work except to say good things. Yeah. They want to be able to complain and criticize as much as they want, especially about the boss. But, you know, they don't want to hear anything that doesn't please them. Yeah? Right? Have we ever been like that? Really? Oh. Oh, just one, so okay. Okay. So we see, you know, sometimes we say, oh, the followers don't have any power. They have a ton of power. They can mess up the whole thing. Yeah? If you have one uncooperative follower in the team, I mean, the leader can't do anything, the other people can't do anything, it's really blocked. On the other hand, you know, if you're a good follower, then you really pay attention to communication, you know, and you communicate well with the leader, you communicate well with the other people that you're working with, okay? But sometimes we don't like to communicate, you know, like if something isn't going well on the project, we don't like to communicate that because as soon as you communicate it, that means you're open to criticism. So what we do is we keep our mouth shut and we wait for somebody else to bring up what doesn't work. Okay? Yeah, but we do that a lot, don't we? Yeah, out of fear, out of protection. I don't want to get criticized. Yeah? And so then we might go to the leader and say, oh, it's your responsibility to bring this up. In other words, I have this opinion and thought, but I don't want to get blamed if the other person gets angry. But you're the leader, and the first thing on your job description is you take the blame for everything. So I'm handing it to you. We do that, don't we? Yeah. So, you know, you have to see what kind of situation it is. Sometimes the situation is such that it's better to go to the person in charge and communicate to them. Other situations, it's better to communicate directly with the other colleague. Yeah? Or in other situations, it's better to bring it up in a group discussion. We have to see what's better. But it's quite interesting how we are, you know, as followers, and how, you know, whether we're a leader or a follower, everything we're doing is to protect our ego and to not get criticized. You know? I'd say, along with accomplishing the project, our main purpose is to not get criticized and to get praised. Would you agree? Yeah? That in our work, that's a lot of what motivates it. But often we are not at all aware of those inner motivations. You know? We say, oh, well, I'm here to do this work, to do this project. But actually, if we look at it, what are we looking out for? My reputation, my image, whether I get praised or blamed. In other words, my comfort. And so a lot of, you know, looking out for our own ego things makes the actual work situation quite difficult. Okay? Because when a primary thing is our own ego needs, then when we look at the other people we're working with, either the colleagues or the person who's above us, or the person, if we're in a managerial thing, you know, if you have a person above you, you have a person below you in the hierarchy, we're always looking above and below and side to side and getting jealous of people. Yeah. Oh, those people who are equal to me, I'm competing with them, but they might get the, you know, more accolade than me. Or those people who are lower down on the scale, they're really coming up, and they're really good, and they're going to displace me, and where am I going to be at? Or, you know, this kind of thing. Or, you know, all of us work so hard, but the boss gets all the credit. So we have all this kind of jealousy that comes up, all this competitiveness. You know, and also a lot of conceit. You know, oh well, among all the people who were working, who were equal, I'm the best one, and I'm definitely better than the ones below me. But I'm also nervous because someday they're going to be better than me, and I'm really better than the boss. But nobody really recognizes it. But I don't want the position of the boss because then I'm going to have to be responsible and I get blamed. So I'd much rather get the credit for the good project and the blame and problems can go to the boss. Yeah? So, you know, we have all these different ways of thinking going on in our mind, and very often we are not at all consciously aware of them. You know? Because they are such ingrained habits of how we go through life. You know? Just our basic, you know, how our mind has structured what we see, how we have described the environment to us, to ourselves, and what we consider important. This is it. And so it's so internal, we're so stuck with it, that we don't even see that it's something that's based on all of our conceptualization. Yeah. And instead we think it's really real and tremendously important. And so everything we do is, you know, guided to that. And so we have various strategies to kind of make sure our ego is okay in a work situation. Yeah. So some of us, what our strategy is we stay under the radar. Yeah? And it's like, okay, I protect myself. I stay under the radar. I let other people bring things up. Or I might, you know, go to the leader, tell somebody else. But I'll just, like, do my thing and mind my own business. At the same time, looking at what everybody else is doing and being very critical and judgmental of it. But I don't want to say anything, because if I say something, then I come above the radar and I'm open to being criticized. So I stay under the radar, keep my mouth closed, but inside I'm percolating. You know? And my opinion factory, my judgments are, you know, kind of really going there. And I'm, what's this one doing? What's that? You know? We spend a lot of time with that. Others of us, you know, it's like, I see something that isn't going to work. Well, I'm just going to go tell them. That's all. You know? And so, without any awareness of the situation, we just walk in and, like, plump, you know, here's what we're doing wrong, here's the way it should be, here's my idea, you know. And so sometimes we're not very sensitive to where the other people are at, or what the situation is in which we're talking, or sometimes we don't know the whole background for the whole thing. But, you know, we're not afraid to be above the radar, but we're just, you know, dropping our bombs wherever we want. You know? Okay? So, you know, and then some of us, when we do that, if people start to give us some feedback that they're unhappy about what we said, then what we do is say, oh, but it's not really me who thinks that. It's somebody else who said it. Mm-hmm. And I'm just passing the information along to you. You know? Or this is what the leader really wants. I'm just telling you. So don't blame me if you don't like it. You know, go blame the leader. Or this other colleague, you know, is the one complaining. So I'm just telling you. Fact that I agree with them, I'm not telling you, but, you know, so you blame them if you don't like what I'm saying. Okay, so we do all these kind of things to protect ourselves. Yeah, or sometimes what we'll do is we'll backbite against other people that we're working with, you know, and we'll talk badly about other people in order, as a way to show that, you know, we're not like them. Yeah. Why isn't it going well? Because of what they're doing. Yeah. And so we may even scapegoat somebody else. And this happens so often in groups. Yeah, especially in work situation. Yeah. You just find one person. And we learned it in school. We did this in grammar school. Do you remember? You know, sometimes we're so mean to other kids. Just pick one other person and scapegoat. And, you know, they did this, they did that. You know, the other person sitting there, they haven't, you know, they hardly did anything. But everybody is just bunching up and blaming them as a way to protect all of our own egos and our own images in, you know, in the work situation. Okay. So these are all kind of habits that we're very skilled in. But often we are just totally unaware, you know. So people may scapegoat one person, they may not even realize it, yeah. And in fact, if it's pointed out, they may say, but that person actually is responsible for everything, without realizing, you know, the own factors in their own mind for scapegoating, you know. And then there's other people who walk around and they're very afraid of being the scapegoat. So they walk around, you know, because maybe in grammar school they were the scapegoat. So they walk around on eggshells all the time, trying to please everybody else. And whenever anybody else says anything, they immediately go to, I'm getting falsely accused, I'm getting scapegoated, and they can't hear anything. Yeah. You know, like being just really super sensitive. So sometimes we're like that too when we're in a work situation, aren't we? You know, just very super sensitive, easily offended. Somebody asks a question and we're like immediately on the defensive. Why are they asking me that? Yeah. Never dawned on us that maybe they want just the information. We always take a question as a personal affront. You know, maybe they just need information. Okay, so what I'm suggesting here is that we do like a little bit of inventory and a little bit of just looking inward and seeing, you know, what are my habits in terms of working in projects? Yeah? What are my habitual behaviors when I work in a group to accomplish something? Mm-hmm. And whether we're in the leadership, follower position, whatever, what kind of tactics do I rely on to make sure that I come out okay? Mm-hmm. So coming out okay may just be not getting blamed. It could be getting praised. It could be getting public credit. It could be getting a raise or an honor. It could be, you know, who knows what. Yeah, getting more attention. Some of us want more attention from the boss, so we, you know, jockey with everybody else to you know, be in that position. Yeah. You know, so it's very interesting. Some people don't want the boss to notice them at all. Other people want the boss to notice them a lot, in a good way. Okay. So it's quite interesting, isn't it? Don't you think, when we really look at this? And like, what are our usual patterns? What are our usual habits that we do? Yeah. And then, you know, some of us, it's like, well, I want to be noticed by the person who's most important. But then when they don't notice me, then I just completely, you know, adapt the position of, you know, laying low and going under the radar. Yeah. And so it's interesting how we'll go back and forth between different things, you know. So, yeah, it's very good just to do some reflection and see what our habits are. And the thing is that sometimes just reflecting on that and seeing what our habits are, it already gives us a lot of information, and we come to understand why we seem to have the same repeated difficulty in different work situations. Now, have you noticed that? That in work situations, very often, your problem in working with people, it's something that comes up in many, many situations. Do you think? Yeah? Is it different problems in each time, or is there some pattern, maybe a few different problems that consistently arise? Yeah. So it's interesting to just, you know, sometimes when we see what our habits are, then we can see, oh, well, this is where I meet this kind of situation very often. Because part of my energy is creating this situation. Yeah? We help to create the situation, don't we? Okay, so then there's a few things that are very good things to practice in work situations that will definitely help us and definitely help the people we work with. And one is showing appreciation. Okay, so showing appreciation is based on a totally different premise than our usual thing of ego protection. Because I'm not here talking about showing appreciation so that people will like us, because that's based on ego protection. But actually appreciating what other people do, because our eyes are open and we're looking at what they do and we see they have talents and abilities, and it actually makes us feel good to point out to other people what their talents and abilities are and what they did well. Okay, so it, you know, when we pay attention to other people, you know, in a healthy way, in a good way, then showing appreciation to them becomes a new habit that we establish. Okay. At first, it's like all habits, we have to push ourselves to do it. Yeah. sometimes we don't like to show appreciation because if we praise somebody else, it means that they're better than we are, or they're getting the credit and we aren't. But, you know, it's actually when our mind is really focused on creating happiness, then showing appreciation, showing gratitude, praising other people for their good qualities is something that in fact brings us a lot of joy and a lot of happiness ourselves. Okay? So making it a habit to point people's good qualities out to them when we're in a work situation, or to acknowledge what they did in a work situation, instead of just taking it for granted, you know, to say, you did this, thank you, you know. Or even to be more specific, you got this to me on time, when I needed it, I really appreciate your thoughtfulness. Yeah. Or, you know, oh, you saw what possible difficulties could arise, and you fixed them even before it came to the rest of the group. Okay? So really seeing the good things that other people are doing and commenting on that. Yeah? And so this involves a whole new way of looking at things, because we have to open our eyes and look at what other people are doing. You know? I mean, we already do that, but we're usually doing it in a critical way, aren't we? Yeah, we're looking for the spots instead of looking for all the good things they do. So to train the mind to look at the good things they do and really remark on that and notice that. And I have this kind of theory sometimes that people are like musical instruments. And if you play a musical instrument with skill, it makes beautiful music. And if you play the musical instrument poorly, it sounds awful, like a screeching violin. So it's kind of like with people. If we play the people, in other words, if we, the way we treat the people is in a skillful way that really is done with respect and care, it's like we bring out their beautiful music in them, you know? Whereas with the same person, if we treat them with disparaging them and putting them down, then we bring out the screeching violin. Okay? So it's like the people we work with, have different qualities, different attributes, and depending on how we, quote, play them, in other words, how we're relating, we will bring out different things in them. Okay? So then the question is, the challenge is, how can we be a good piano player or a good violin player? And it really requires some thought and some finesse. You don't just pick up a violin and pick up the bow. You know, I can play this because I'm good and I know best. Sorry, that isn't enough qualification to play. So similarly, you know, whether we're on a colleague level or a supervisor, you know, we're the above or below on the hierarchy, we have to learn how to bring out other people's qualities. And just being me and having my ideas is not enough skill to bring out somebody else's good qualities. You know, because sometimes we come in like a bull in the china shop. Don't we? You know? Okay, folks, I'm fed up. I'm gonna fix everything. Yeah. And it usually doesn't go over so big. Yeah. So to learn, you know, what's good in different situations, and what do different people need in different situations? When does somebody need praise and acknowledgement, and when do they need a kick in the tush? You know, and how do you give them a kick and a tush in the tush with love, not with anger? Okay. And then how do you deal with it if they think you're doing it with anger, even though you're doing it with love? You know, so it takes some things working with our own mind too, because we never know how people are going to respond to us, do we? Yeah. So it's always, you know. It's like throwing dice, you know. It's really how other people respond. It's so up in the air. You can look at it and you can see that you say something, they could understand it this way, they can understand it the opposite way. We have no control what to do. Okay? But sometimes at least we can get some skill so that our motivation is a good one. And, you know, and we're really saying things truthfully and with a sincere heart and showing appreciation and gratitude towards others. Yeah. So that's one thing that I think is very helpful to do in working situations. Yeah. Another is to be responsible ourselves. There's a quote in our Pratimoksha Sutra that talks about how a monastic goes around and like a bee, you know, a bee gets the pollen and leaves. Yeah, it doesn't get stuck and muddled in situations. And so similarly, we, instead of noticing, oh, you know what I'm doing? I'm conflating two different quotations. Let me start over. Okay? One of them, the one about the bee, is that you go and do what you have to do, and then you're out of there. You don't get stuck in something you don't need to get stuck in. Okay? So that was one of the verses the Buddha talked about. There's another one about pay more attention to what we do and what we've left undone than to what other people do and what they've left undone. Okay? We're usually paying more attention to what other people do and don't do. We need to pay attention to what I do and what I don't do. Okay? And so, you know, this pertains to our family, it pertains to our workplace, it pertains to so many things. You know, when have we taken on a certain responsibility and been, you know, and clarified exactly what we're responsible for instead of leaving it murky, you know, so knowing exactly what we're responsible for and what we're not. And then when do we follow through with our responsibility? And then when do we report back? Yeah. And when we meet an obstacle, when do we ask for help? Some of us don't like to ask for help. Yeah. It's like we need help, but we're too proud to ask for help. So, you know, when do we ask for help when we need it? When do we say to somebody, oh, you know, I signed up, but actually it's more than I bit off more than I can chew. Okay, when are we honest about that? And when do we just not show up and then avoid the person because we feel ashamed afterwards? Okay, so, you know, all these things are like looking and really like, okay, what's my responsibility? And not having responsibility like a heavy burden. I've realized some people see responsibility as like this heavy thing. I see responsibility as like this creative openness. You know, oh, I have responsibility. That means I could be creative. Yeah. Other people say you're responsible, meaning, uh-oh, I got to do it, and if I don't, they're going to criticize me. It's the word responsibility, I've learned, is people understand it, the implications, in very, very different ways. Okay? But in any case, however we understand it, trying to really think what it is in a helpful way, and to be responsible, not because we're trying to avoid getting criticized, but because we really care about the people we work with. Yeah? Because sometimes, you know, we're responsible, somebody asks us, you know, or even we're not responsible and somebody asks us for a favor, we are responsible, somebody's checking on us what, you know, if we've done it or not. And we just like, what's the word, kind of say, forget you, you know, we shine them on. That's the term. We shine them on. And it's, you know, they say, oh, have you done this? Or, you know, when do you think this will be better? You know, and we don't answer truthfully. And it's like we pretend like we don't even care, like what they're asking is something stupid. Yeah. And I think we often do that because we're trying to protect our own ego. Yeah. But if we stop and we think, you know, my purpose here is not to protect my own ego, it's to benefit sentient beings. Okay? Therefore, if somebody asks me a question or they ask for help or whatever, let me listen and let me hear what they're saying and let me respond honestly and straightforwardly and not shine them on and not, you know, joke about it or go, you know, all these different things that we do. Okay? So, you know, having good work relationships depends on doing this inventory yourself and then really thinking, you know, kind of what are better ways to act in this situation. And in all the, and it's not just better ways, not just how do we speak and what do, but how do we have a kind heart in this situation? Because I think if we have a kind heart, then very often the body and speech follow after. Not always. Some people have a really kind heart, but their way of speaking is very curt, or their way of acting can be curt and easily misunderstood, you know. But generally, we have to, you know, really make sure we have a kind heart, and at the same time, be mindful about how we're speaking and how we're acting. Okay. And we just came back from His Holiness Dalai Lama's teachings in New York. He was teaching Shantideva's text, Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life. And chapter 5 is on conscientiousness or heedfulness. And this is a very apropos topic here, okay? Because in it, Shantideva really talks about, you know, how to act when we're with people. You know, very hard, you know, down-to-earth, practical things to do and not to do. So, you know, that's on kind of the practical skill side, yeah? But we also need to work on the mental side, which is the next chapter, the one on fortitude, on patience, okay? But all of them, you know, have to do with our work relationships. Okay, so in the book I talked about... for working, some of the key things to mention that are you know, good things to practice. So one was showing appreciation. Another one was being ethical. So in all of our dealings with other people, to really be honest and be clear and not to lie. And this is another thing. I mean, there are big lies that we conduct in business, you know, and then there's also subtle lies that we do to cover our mistakes or to subtly deceive people, okay? But really training the mind to be truthful, not in a, you know, put it in your face way, but really in a kind way because we care, okay? And then appreciating others. And then here, I did quote this thing, do not look out for others' flaws, for what they do or do not do, but look out for what one oneself should do and should not do. Yeah? So really looking inside. How can I contribute to this situation? Okay? And so, you know, really having that kind heart, letting people know where we're at when we're working on a project, letting them know when we need help. Okay? When we aren't able to do what we've said we're going to do, instead of kind of finding a way out of it, just apologizing, you know, and then really learning from the situation. I think that's very important, actually, because what we've noticed sometimes is people promise something, they don't do it. And then they feel so ashamed afterwards that they don't talk to you again, even though you care about them and want to know how they are. Okay. And so sometimes we've been on one or the other side of the situation. We've been the one that, you know, we get really down on ourselves and we don't communicate, or with a person who all of a sudden somebody's backed away and we don't understand why. But in this kind of situation, you know, when we've said we're going to do something, we find out we can't do it. communicate that to the other person in a reasonable amount of time, help them find a substitute if we can, and then let it go. Then there's absolutely nothing to be ashamed about. Is there? You know? I mean, it happens all the time that we bite off more than we're going to chew. All of us do it. Yeah? And so when we find that we've done it, instead of feeling ashamed, like we've let the other person down, and then we slink away and don't communicate, which actually is worse for the other person. Yeah? To actually just say, I'm sorry, I couldn't do that. Give them enough time, do what we can, and then drop it, but learn from the situation, you know, and go on and not shame ourselves and put ourselves down. Okay? So that kind of thing. Okay. Then also learning to listen to feedback. Yeah. So having an open attitude towards the feedback that our colleagues give us. So instead of instantly assuming that somebody is there to criticize us, to assume that they're there to help us. It's very interesting how some people, if they give us feedback, we assume they're criticizing us. Somebody else could say the exact same words and we assume that they're being kind and helping us. It's very interesting, isn't it? Yeah? And how we don't really give other people a chance and pay attention to the content of what they're saying, but we make so many assumptions about why they're saying it. Yeah? And so we'll listen to this person say it because we assume they have a good intention. But this person says the same thing, but we assume they have a bad intention, so we don't listen. What about just paying attention to the information they're giving us and seeing if that information is useful and forgetting about what their intention was? Because their intention is their thing. They create the karma by their intention. Yeah. If they say something useful to us, it doesn't matter whether they have a good intention or a bad intention. What they're saying is useful to us. Yeah. Why do we assume that if somebody has a bad intention, we shouldn't listen to what they say? It's because of our ego, isn't it? But somebody might have a bad intention, but they might really see something that we need to work on. Yeah, and it might really help us to listen. Why do we assume that somebody we like always has a, you know, somebody who has a good intention, that we should listen to them? Yeah? Because they may also not have all the information in the situation. And what they say may not be accurate, but we assume because they have a good intention that it is. Okay? But they may not know everything that's going on in it. And so may erroneously say something, even though they mean quite well. Okay? So I think, you know, it's a very interesting practice for us to step away from this mind that is always first figuring out who's my friend and who's my enemy, and then deciding based on that whether the statements they say are useful or not. Why not listen, you know, put aside who's my friend and who's my enemy and who has a good motivation, who has a bad motivation, and just listen to the content and then evaluate the content ourselves, seeing if that's helpful information or unhelpful information. That's so hard to do, isn't it? Yeah? We are so incredibly ego-sensitive. So super sensitive. Yeah? And it's to our own disadvantage. Our ego sensitivity makes our own life difficult. It makes it difficult for us to grow and learn because we're so sensitive. Yeah? So actually, to be kind to ourselves, we need to be less sensitive. Yeah? So you see quite clearly here how the self-centered mind is actually an impediment. Yeah? Because it's the self-centered mind that makes us so sensitive. Okay? So, you know, really kind of having a different approach. You know, I'm here to learn. I'm here to learn. Yeah? Everybody can give whatever feedback. I want to learn whatever I'm able to learn from it. Yeah, my purpose is not to protect my ego. My purpose is to learn. My purpose is to benefit the people I'm working with and to benefit the people who are going to receive the benefit from this project. Okay. There's a little bit of time for questions. People have questions or comments? Yeah.
So, in the situations that you're talking about right now, so I'm hearing the feedback, you know, let's say, here's what happens for me. Like, and I think it's pretty familiar to it. I'm doing something, I think I'm doing pretty well. Then somebody comes in and they give feedback or criticism. Motive might be to help, motive might be, who knows what, jealousy, whatever. That doesn't matter. But then this strong reaction comes up in me. And I'm wondering what you do right there, like right there and then.
Okay.
You know, when you really feel that strong ego that just pops up, like, why are they telling me anything? Why don't they leave me alone? Do they think they know how to do this better? Well, then they can do it. You know what I mean? And I'm out of here. You know,
it's interesting. Because we all say those exact same words to ourselves, don't we? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. If they think they're so good, they can do it.
Yeah. And so all that's going on in the head, right in that moment, and I'm trying not to dump it out there.
Yeah.
What do you do right there?
Okay, so what do you do right there? Somebody said something for whatever reason.
Yeah.
You know?
They're probably helping.
Yeah, they're probably helping. Because most people do want to help.
Yeah.
You know, and they say, fold the towel this way.
Yeah.
And we go inside. What do you think you are telling me how to fold this towel? I know perfectly well how to do it. If you think you can do it better, you do it. I'm out of here, you know. It's like, screw you. Beep, 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 and we go on with our, you know. Okay. And, you know, so we have this incredible inner dialogue going on. In response to, you know, please fold the towel. Yeah. I mean, you can see so clearly how we're out of touch with reality, can't you? You know, it's like these situations are like such clear examples about how we are living in our own little world here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So your question is, what do you do at the time when there's this incredible inner dialogue, you know, that you really want to put on top of the other person, but you've heard enough dharma that you know that you should really try not to put on top of the other person?
Or you've done it often enough, you know, it doesn't work well.
Yeah, you've done it enough and you know it doesn't work. So what do you do at that moment? This is where it can be very helpful to put our hands together and say, thank you, I'll think about that. The last thing you want to do is... You know, because that's the ultimate, you know, because at that moment, our self-centered mind is just raging. Our ego is as big as Mount Everest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And it's to say, thank you, I'll think about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, first of all, I think, you know, putting our hands together, it's also a physical gesture that mm-hmm. all this junk in my heart is not going to go anywhere past my hands. Mm-hmm. You know? Thank you. Yeah. I'll think about it.
kind of like doing that. And when we say those words, it brings some closure to that moment, because we aren't walking away shining that person on. We aren't flipping them off. We're responding. But we're also realizing that it's not good. You know, like you said, we've done it enough and we've dumped and we know it doesn't work. We've heard enough dharma that we know that we're sending ourselves to, you know, creating negative karma. We don't want to do that. And so when we say, I'll think about it, that basically means, I'll think about it means I'm going to get my mind put together about this and calm myself down and then think about what you're really trying to convey. Yeah? And so it somehow brings some closure, because you're acknowledging that the other person said it. You're saying that you're going to do some work. And we're not just saying it to the other person, we're saying it to ourselves. It's not like, I'm going to think about it, which means I'm going to think about all the nasty, horrible things you did so I can figure out how to retaliate. Yeah. It means I'm going to think about what's going on in me and, you know, calm myself down here. Okay. And then if we do that, you know, then stopping. And sometimes in this situation, we need to just stop right there and calm ourselves down. And then really think, well, why? What are they really trying to communicate?
It's also a good time to remember that all sentient beings want happiness.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot of times what people are trying to, you know, I want to help you so you appreciate me and I have happiness.
Yeah. Yeah. So lots of times when those people are saying those things, it's because they want to be happy. They're volunteering their help, and they want to please us, you know. And so can we have that same attitude back of listening to what they're requesting and wanting to help them in return?
Only after we're putting our hands.
Yeah. Well, this is why it's a practice, you know. A practice in a monastic situation, you put your hands together and say thank you. Yeah. But we usually forget. Mm-hmm. We don't do it. Yeah. But very helpful to, you know.
Mm-hmm. I find it helpful sometimes when there's a difficult person to think about. There's just no way for that person to be in my life, and it's not karmically set it up. So this person is here to teach me. And this mm-hmm. is the person, you know, this is the mm-hmm. precious jewel who's here now.
So. Right.
This is
okay, so when you have a difficult person in your life, to think that my karma set it up for this person to be in my life, mm-hmm. and then like the 37 verses, 37 practices of Bodhisattva talk about, you know, they're my teacher, they're a precious jewel, they're the one that's helping me the most. Yep. Mm-hmm. And take it mm-hmm. that way. Yeah. So my purpose is to learn. My purpose is to practice. They're helping me practice. Yeah. But it's amazing how this mind that wants to be right is like, it explodes all over the place. You know? We would rather be right than learn to do something correctly. It's true, isn't it? We'd much rather be right than to learn to do something in a better way.
I had a situation just called. Like somebody asked me to teach them how to do something I knew and they didn't. Mm-hmm. And halfway through the process, they're telling me how to do it. And you know, I fortunately was able to step back and realize that. Yeah, sometimes it doesn't make any difference. If I want to turn the page to the right, and then want to turn it to the left, does it make any difference? You know, the page gets turned. And sometimes we get hung up on that. Hey, we always turn the page to the right. We've always done it that way, and that's the way you're supposed to do it. And sometimes we have to step back and say, no, you know, a lot of the things that we think should be done this way... even in this case, which I thought it was, you know, really enlightening to me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, so what? They wanted to turn it to the right, and I'd always turn it to the left. Okay, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
And we do get hung up on it.
Yeah. So sometimes we get hung up on details, and we get hung up in, well, this is the way we do it, and this is the way we've always done it. Whereas the other person may have a valid way of doing it that just is a different way, but the end product is the same. But we don't look at the end product. We want them to do it the same way we do it. So it's very often helpful in conflict situations. Instead of imagining that here is us and here's the other person and we're facing each other, you know, with the conflict in between us, to envision it as I'm on this side of the table and the other person's on this side of the table. And we're both looking at the problem together and we're going to figure out how to do it. Yeah. So instead of setting up the working relationship as an adversarial one, you know, talk with the other person, you know, ensure that you have the same aim, and then how can we work together on this side of the table together to accomplish that aim together? Yeah. Yeah, it's a different conceptual thing. I mean, and it's actually a spatial thing, because so often when we're in conflict, we see it, don't we? As this versus this, boom, instead of this and this here. Yeah? So just spatially changing it.
How do you find the space between being a kind, compassionate person and being a doormat?
Okay, so how do you find the space between being a kind, compassionate person and being a doormat? Compassion involves thinking about what's really best for the other person in the long term. So compassion doesn't mean doing what the other person wants you to do. We often think it does, but compassion means thinking about what's the best thing for the other person in the long term. And so sometimes the best thing for the other person in the long term is for us to say no. Yeah. And to say, I'm not going to participate in that. Yeah. Sometimes that's often the kindest thing to say to somebody. Is, I'm not going to join in on that. I don't condone that. I don't participate in that. And if instead we think, oh, kindness means I just go along with what that person's doing, sometimes that is actually enabling their bad behavior. Yeah? And so it really requires a lot of clear thinking to really see what's fair in a situation. And then act on that with compassion, not only for yourself, but for the other person.
Mm-hmm. I have a question about knowing what's best for someone in the long term. I don't have a lot of confidence that I can do that for others.
Okay. So when we don't have a lot of confidence on that we know what's best for the other person in the long term. That's hard. And it's sometimes hard even knowing what's good for them in the short term. Isn't it? Long term, short term, it's hard. Yeah. So sometimes we just have to pause and think and consider the best we can. Yeah. And we're always doing our best, and then later on we evaluate and we learn from the situation. Okay. But all we can do is ever the best we can. But the thing is to stop and think about it instead of just having a knee-jerk reaction. Mm-hmm. That makes some sense?
Mm-hmm. I was just going to add that when I felt that way myself, one thing I've done is find somebody I trust and run the situation.
Yes.
And they often can say, they ask questions and go, oh yeah, I did this or that.
Yeah, that's very good, to talk it over, the situation with somebody we trust, who asks questions and makes comments and helps us get clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Okay, let's sit quietly for a minute and then we'll dedicate. Due to this merit, may wisdom attain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forever.